It's time for Retro Talk with Retro Rose here on
WXPM
on 98.5
FM.
This is Rose with Retro Talk in a very, very special episode. We have Michael Bell with us, and he's from the G.I. Joe fans. He was Duke, many other characters. I'm going to let him mention it here in a minute. And he was also one of my favorite Autobots, Prowl. So I'm going to introduce him, and along the way, Michael Bro's going to join us too. So Mike, can you say hello to everyone?
Hello, everyone. I'm in the middle of my breakfast, so you'll forgive me. I've got a mouthful of whatever this is, Kashi Go and strawberries, but I'm here.
Oh, I love strawberries. You're lucky I'm not there. I'd be taking some off of you. And Mike, do you want to chime in too? We got two mics this time.
Yeah, this is going to get really confusing. This is the Bro Show here, having a lot of fun with Miss Retro Talk Rose, and I'm getting to talk with Mr. Bell, which is kind of geeking me out a little bit, although I'm kind of hungry for some breakfast again now, although I had it way early this morning.
Oh, that's right. You guys are 3 hours later.
Yeah, and it's horrible because I was rushing out the door to get to the station and burnt my toast, so I didn't have a very good breakfast this morning. Nothing healthy anyways. But I would like to start on the G.I. Joe side of things. Because that was probably one of the... I don't know. G.I. Joe was out before Voltron, but was Voltron out before Transformers?
I think... Good God, I can't remember. I can't even remember what I'm eating right now.
I think... Remember that? I think G.I. Joe probably was around 1983, 84 early, but I know that when I listened to Neil Ross's book, because I listened to the audiobook not too long ago, he said that the recording sessions for Voltron surprisingly came out after the recording sessions of the first Transformer episodes.
But, that's very possible, yeah.
But it's
that's
funny.
Very possible, yeah.
Because I remember Voltron before I remember Transformers. So it's kind of funny. Maybe it could have been a recording session before the other?
We did two Voltrons. There was one in 85 and there was one in 90. New one in 90 with some new people in it. Because a few of them had went to that great big voice recording studio in the sky. So we did two of them. In fact, I'm doing a Voltron, first ever Voltron Con in Indianapolis in October.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man, now I...
I think we need to go.
Yeah. I'm a huge Voltron fan. I mean, I've never cosplayed as one, although I'm tempted. But now I'd be the old Witch Hagar. But
Of course, yeah. Of course, that'd be fun.
That would be fun. You know what? And saying that, isn't it fun? Isn't it more fun to play a villain than it is a good guy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good guys are absolutely boring. Unless they have a great sense of humor, which I think a few of the Transformers had a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Prowl had a good sense of humor. He had a dry sense of humor.
I loved Prowl myself. I know Rose is a huge fan, but
yes.
I loved the one particular episode where it was Chip controlling his battle computer.
Yes.
And it was a nice little conversation between the two while he was doing it, and I loved the way you delivered it. It was deadpan, but also fun. Like, that was one of the defining moments for Prowl for me.
I was the original deadpan Deadpool.
That's right.
I have to call Ryan Reynolds and tell him, hey, you know, I ought to charge you for stealing my stuff.
You totally should. You totally should. That'd be some good bucks there.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. There's so much to cover, too. But I do want to cover the first time Tony and I met you, too. I'll have to not be so random on the next segment of this interview. But in 2001, Tony and I met you. And just recently, that BotCon footage from 2001 was put up. I don't know who put it up. Tony would know more, but it was John Stevenson was with you and Greg Berger. And
he
says that the whole panel was there. And do you remember they gave you, some guy gave you a swoop And he wanted to know, Tony wanted to know if you still have that swooping package.
Gee, I don't recall. I have some stuff here. I may have. I'm not sure. I may have it. Why, is it worth $1 billion?
I don't know how much it's worth now, but I remember it was mint in package, and Tony was like, wow, that's pretty cool. But whenever we met you guys, it was at a dinner party that night, and John Stevenson was there. And we went up to John, and he says, well, I'm going to tell you the truth. I can't remember what my character was like. Can you describe him to me? And Tony says, well, he's a bit whiny, and he has like a little bit of a Southern accent going on. And he just got it spot on. And I thought about that the other day when he mentioned that, when he had watched the, you know, this old footage. He says, I bet you that's the way it was for a lot of the characters. They would give you like a definition of what this character is going to be like, if he's going to have an accent or something. And that's probably what you played off of to get started, right?
Well, actually, what they do is they just show you a drawing. I wish I had the drawings that they gave me at the time. But they show you a drawing of the character, prototype of the character, and they say, all right, come up with something. You say, you come up with something. And then when you do the show, and they throw another character at you, you go, well, let's see, I just did this. I better adjust it a little bit and maybe raise his voice or lower his voice or give him a Southern accent or give him a different dialect or something. And unless they're really specific, like in Zaymont and Tomac's, you know, they gave me Tomac's, and Zaymont. He said it was Zaymont, right? Yeah. And then you adjust to that. And of course, Major Blood is Australian, so obviously I knew where I was going with that. But often it's just, hey, this is the prototype, this is a drawing, and come up with something real quick. Because you're there. Generally, they were creating characters on the fly. So when we went into do session, you knew your character or your two characters, and they would say, "Mike, try this character," and I say, "Oh, okay." And then they go, "Frank, here's this character." It was just really crazy.
So it really, and Mike, you can always chime in too. I'm telling Mike,
oh yeah, no,
chime in. But, whenever I heard that, though, and I guess it's the same way with Dan, because Dan does a character named Outback, and they said, okay, you're going to be from Australia, too. So he just kind of gave it that, you know, that feel that he was from Australia. And,
John Stevenson, rest in peace, when we got together years later at Hanna-Barbera, it was like old home week for us because we did a soap opera together called Morning Star.
Oh, I remember that.
I did Morning Star with him years ago. It was my first really major piece, you know, major working ability, you know, concept. And John was a bad guy in it. He was the bad husband poisoning his wife. Jesse Jones Marlin. Yeah.
But, honestly, I want to speak about some of your screen time, too, because we were just talking about it. Tony loves the Roller Coaster movie, and from 1977. I guess we have a copy of it somewhere in the house, but he loves it because that's one of his favorite movies.
It was a fun film. We did it up at some place out in the valley. Some water facility, some crazy carnival place, whatever. It was great fun. And Richard Widmark and I were going, he was also gone, but a very famous actor at the time, and he was the star. And we were going to lunch, and there was another guy who was trailing with us who had a minor role, and we kept bugging him, and he kept saying, well, is there a difference between acting on stage and acting on screen, and why do you make the adjustment, and what do you... And finally, Widmark turned around to me, stopped. He said, okay. He said, look at this guy. And he pointed to me and he said, watch what he does. And I said, oh, my God. He says, he's got it. He's got it down. He's got it, what we call, and I hope I can say this, He's got a detector. He knows when he's going too far. Watch it. Show you what to do. And I thought, oh, what a great thing for Richard Widmark. Oh, my God. Big movie star. How cool is that? That was fun.
And you were kind of like the character, too, that Tony said that you wanted to keep the roller coaster moving. You were almost like the mayor from Jaws. You didn't want to have the...
Yep. Yep. There's always one of those, and I was one of those. Yep, absolutely.
Oh, that's just so much fun. I haven't seen this movie. I need to see
it
now.
Oh, it's a great movie.
I need to see it now.
Any kind of movie like that that has, like, almost like a terror element to it. Yeah, it's like, I love it.
I have to go back just to G.I. Joe real quick. There's one set of characters that you were talking about momentarily with Tomax, and then they had his twin brother, Zaymot. When you were recording those voices, did you have the other voice actor to feed off of at the same time? Because oftentimes they finished each other's sentences and things like that. How did that work for you guys?
Then we did. That was Corey. Corey's wonderful. Corey must weigh about 12 pounds wet. He's got a voice like Godzilla. I mean, it's just amazing that he's got that wonderful voice of his. So we played off each other very, very well. He's a very cool kid. But he's like a kid to me. And we had the difference in our tones was really smart for Wally to cast us like that.
Wow. Yeah, I just always thought it was very cool. That I love hearing that because it was, to me as a kid, it was cool hearing you guys do that and then to say the same thing at the same time. Like, you know, finish the last little bit at the same time. I just thought that was a cool, even as a kid, I got the fact that took some timing. That took some comedic / acting timing, and I love that sort of thing.
Oh, good. I'm glad you appreciate that, Mike. Because that was really hard work. I mean, by the time I got home, I was a nervous wreck.
So, Michael, what was more stressful, on-screen stuff or the animation? Which one was more tiresome by the end of the day?
I think this screen stuff is because most people are not aware. When you're not the star of the show, you know, I've done a lot of TV shows, a lot of guest starring roles. You get a honey wagon, which is another word for a trailer that's either too hot, too cold, doesn't smell very good because it's been used 643,000 times. And you're the last shot of the day because you're not one of the beauty characters, one of the regulars. One of the regulars have to look beautiful on screens. And you start at about 7 in the morning. You hit the studio, and you go into makeup, and they slap this crap on you. And then you're in the wardrobe. They've already done wardrobe days before, and you have to put that stuff on. And it's all kind of fun in the beginning. And after a while, you go, wow, it's... My shot comes at the end of the day, and everybody's really tired, and the crew is really tired. The guy's standing around holding the cable and taking care of the lights and all that good stuff, and they just want to go home. And you've got 3 pages of solid or 4 pages of solid dialogue.
Oh, my gosh.
And the main actors, often the big stars, will often have left, and so they have somebody else standing in for them, unless they're really... They're really pros, and they understand the situation. Like, it's not important. But the thing is that there were some really good guys at that point, and some good ladies at that point. But most of them would disappear, and you had all the hard work at the end of the day, and everybody's looking at their watches. I would have to say that was the most stressful. If stress is the word you'd use, it was just most uncomfortable at a certain point.
And, you know, speaking of the wardrobe, Mike was talking about Next Generation, and I remember your character had a lot of makeup on, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had more makeup on Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
On that one, good God.
Yeah, that was all full facial makeup there and everything with the latex and whatnot, and you were in the pilot episode of what became Star Trek for the last 30, 40 years at this point.
Yeah, except I never get invited to a Star Trek Generation
or
Star Trek Con. They have absolutely refused to invite me for whatever reason.
Oh, my God.
It must have been that incident at the G.I. Joe convention that we don't talk about. Right.
Yeah, my potty pouch. That one. My exposure. Yeah. They never invite me. In fact, the agent, Neri, my agent, keeps contacting him, and they said, well, if he wants to set up his own table and if he wants to pay his own, nah, they don't do any of that.
Yeah, no.
And the guys always come over to me when there's not a convention. The guys from the other tables come over to me and say, hey, Groppler. And it's always kind of fun because the crowd goes, whoa, look who's there.
That's awesome.
God, look at that. There's Brent. Oh, my God. But not for, that's my wife. She has a bad, that's my wife. She has a bad cough.
Oh.
Well, I would be remiss if I don't ask one more thing, because my wife's a huge fan of a particular TV show called Scarecrow and Mrs. King. And on that show, you played a King Edmund.
Yes.
And it was just a fun show to watch, and I love that episode myself. Just, you're just fun to watch on that episode. I got to know, did you play the music yourself?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
You acted. Got it.
I don't even remember this episode, but I'm going to have to look it up because my mom used to watch Scarecrow and Mrs. King all the time.
And I think, as I recall, I'm not sure, but what I think I did was I used the Ricardo Montalban dialect.
Yes, you did. It was very, very thick, but it was so good. And yeah. It seemed like you had a lot of fun with Kate Jackson and Bruce Boxleitner on there, but especially with Max Stewart, who played Billy Blue Note on there, of course, on that episode.
Yes.
And it just looked like you guys had a great chemistry, just even if it was for the one episode.
Yeah, that was cool. That kind of stuff was fun because it gave me a chance to play and stretch a little bit. And the director was a fan. He would say had a couple of directors say I was their lucky human foot. They said they were so pleased to have me on the show, and they would just cast me without having me read and say, he can do it, no sweat.
Oh, wow.
So that was always cool. Yeah, that was always cool.
And I also told Mike earlier that, you know, I was at an event that they had the Three's Company guys there. And I said that you were actually Janet's boyfriend, right? At one point during the show, it was going on for a while, early on maybe?
I had two shows. I had two guest spots. One, I was a dance teacher. It's called All That Jazz or something or other. And the other one, I was a Maharishi, whatever, kind of phony guy going after Suzanne's money. So that was, I did two guest starring those, but that's about it. But the one that I did as the dance teacher was a real fun piece to do, because I got to wear skin-tight outfit that many fans contacted me afterwards and asked me if I would send it to them. They'd send me money, and I went, okay, what's
going on?
Oh, my gosh. And there's actually, I probably shouldn't mention it, but it's funny. There's one that,
uh-oh,
and I don't know if this is very early on in your acting career, because you couldn't have been very old at the time, but you did one that was actually where you were a sailor, right? It was an educational one about why you shouldn't do drugs or something.
I was a sailor.
Yeah, I'm positive you were in it, but...
It was an LSD.
Oh, it was an LSD type video. I don't know if you remember it, but it was Tony and I found it somehow on YouTube once, and it was
talking about damaged goods.
Is it damaged goods? Tony's in the basement listening. He says that's it. And
yeah, damaged goods. I played a character called, oh my God, I forgot what the character's name was, but it was a goofy character. And then, but in the beginning, he's the doctor talking about the horrors of syphilis.
Okay.
And I wind up getting it, and that's where he becomes a doctor. And it's the goofiest. It's really an underground film now.
Yeah. And it's actually on YouTube. We've seen it before.
Oh God!
Anything is on YouTube. It seems like.
Yes, and I got $100 for that. $100 a week. I think we worked for 2 weeks, and we shot it in Banning, California, which should be banned, quite frankly. And it was fun because it was my first film, and I was going to be a big movie star. And it was, oh God, I look at it now, I go, why would anybody hire him? Ever. And I played a cat called Monk. That was my character, Monk. Yeah.
That's actually, I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but when we watch it, sometimes it does give us the giggles.
Oh, it is. It's just, it goes beyond the point of bad. But then they had underground, they had movies. They show them at some theaters every now and then, and I get invited. Charlotte Stewart and I, the only ones I think still alive, and we get invited to appear because it's become a cause celeb for some weird people. Who are into diseases? I don't know. Whatever.
Oh my gosh, that's just great.
It is great though, and you know, we've already talked about 20 minutes into this interview, so I really want to touch base on and I know a lot of fans ask you. There's so many characters you've done in Transformers and in G.I. Joe, so I'm gonna just ask you which ones are your favorites. The ones that you know, because there's some you're just never going to remember because you've done so many.
I love Prowl. I love doing Prowl from Transformers. And I really enjoyed doing the Major Blood because he was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of fun and having to use the dialect that I've worked on and, as opposed to just doing, you know, Duke was obviously, you know, Duke is the big successful one, but I think Major Blood was great fun for me.
Yeah. I think he would be a fun character compared to Duke. I mean, Duke is cool, but he's definitely my favorite character, Major Blood. I love the toy better than Duke. I think I played with Duke first, though, because I went over to the neighbor's house and played with his figure a lot.
That's oh my!
I was always more of a Baroness. I mean, yeah. I shouldn't say it like that. I should say Cobra. I'm more of a Cobra fan.
You're more a bad guy.
I love the bad characters, but when it comes to Transformers,
What does that tell me about Tony?
Oh yeah.
Tony likes the bad characters too. That's why he has Rose.
He actually dressed up for several years as a Viper. Because he's a standalone guy, you know. He wants to be one of the troopers. He wants to be a silent, deadly character. You know, he doesn't say anything, but when whenever we have, like, if he gets irritated with me, usually he won't say nothing, and I know that he's mad. He just looks at me, like,
That's why he's in the basement right now.
Yeah. I understand, and I hope you take the chain off after this is over.
Yeah. And then I've always been a big Baroness fan, but I love playing Zoranna the most because she has that accent. You know, I love, you know, just being a fan and voicing like Zoranna, you know, stuff like that. I love the bad guys. But when it comes to the Autobots now, I love the Autobot cars. I don't know if I ever told you, but I have a boxed, I have all the 1984 and 1985 boxed cars. Like, I've got Sideswipe, which is your character, and I have Prowl. Right. And that was my gifts for years. Tony would buy me a boxed Transformer for my birthday or Christmas each year, so I had all the Autobot cars in box.
Oh, my God. So when you went to the prom, you had an Autobot pinned on instead of a Corsage.
I actually didn't make it to my prom. I skipped it. I was working that day.
That's because she's cooler than the prom.
Yeah, I was working cool, that day. Yeah. I mean, I did get invited, but I was like, no.
And you would have showed up as the Baroness. That wouldn't have been very cool.
No. Well, actually, it probably would have been like they would have chased me out, but...
Well, I mean, there's been times you've been the Baroness on other things, and it's like, whoa. You know, some people are like very impressed when she's dressed up as the Baroness.
You know what? When I first started dressing up as the Baroness in my 30s. I don't do it now because showing how old school I am, I'm too old to do the Baroness now. But back in when I was in my 30s, I would go to these comic cons and I had these fans that would want to pick me up and put me on their shoulder as the Baroness.
Wow.
And they said, oh, can I get a pose with you up on my shoulder? And, you know, I started saying, Tony was with me. I said, yeah, go ahead, you know, put me up on your shoulder for the photo. And we went to a G.I. Joe convention one year, and I dressed up as the Baroness, and a guy put me up on his shoulder, and then he didn't want to put me down. And I had all these costume troop guys coming over and saying, hey, you got to put her down. You got to put her down. And it, you know, so, I mean, it's interesting, but I just love the bad guys. They're more fun.
You talk about strange stuff happening at cons. I remember there was a con, I don't remember which one, but there were two guys dressed up as Transformers, and they were really, I mean, they were, must have been on stilts, I suspect. But they were beautiful costumes, really great cosplay. So I went over and they asked, somebody said, would you pose with them? I said, sure. And I reached up my hand, hoping he would, you know, each guy would grab my hand. Well, I stood in front of him, and I had got something, got a handful of very soft material, and the guy went, whoa! And I grabbed his...
Oh, my goodness.
I wasn't aware that he was at that level. I thought I had a hand, but obviously I didn't have a hand. So...
We just dated for a few weeks.
Yeah, okay. You had to change the oil. I get it. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Totally get it.
That would have been funny and probably embarrassing at the same time.
But it was very funny. I said, "Well, that's you." He said, "Yeah." I went, "Oh my god!" All right. Oh, very, very healthy guy. Nice. Good luck to you.
Oh my gosh. Well, speaking of conventions and everything, I got to know, what's like one of the most unique things besides that you've actually been given to maybe sign or asked to say, like on maybe a phone voicemail or anything like that? Like, what's a couple things that kind of stick out for you over those years?
The only thing that was odd, I think, was somebody wanted me to sign something as Raziel from one of the games I did. And the character that I do from Defiance of Cain, and he said, "Could I get you to sign my body?" And I said, "Where?" And he made a suggestion. I said, "I don't think I'll do that. Try something above your waist."
Oh my gosh!
So I signed his arm, I think it was, or something like that. It was very weird. It was very strange.
Okay.
There was a time when I was at a Comic-Con once, and this is totally off the... Well, I guess it's in the subject, too. Stan Lee was there, right? And I went on an elevator to go back down to where the car parking was, and there was a lady in there, and she had the top of her chest signed by Stan Lee. So I'm like, wow. So she says, "I want to get this tattooed."
I was going to say, that's probably what they're doing. Yeah, they're getting that permanent signature in there. I mean, I don't know if I could ever go that far. I think a nice picture signed or a toy signed is good enough for me. I'm good. So, yeah, so you'll see me that way, Mr. Bell, at some point, probably at RetroCon.
Okay. Cool.
I don't think Mike's going to ask you to sign his chest, though.
No. I mean,
yeah, but there are people that have characters that I've played on their legs and on their arms tattooed, and it's really interesting. I found that no one from Damaged Goods, though. That's surprising.
Oh my gosh.
You know what? Talk about funny things to say, though. I'm sure there's so many outtakes and so many funny things that happened during the recording of G.I. Joe and Transformers. Because, I mean, I know I've heard stories of with Wally Burr how strict he was at times. I've heard stories about Chris Latta.
Yeah.
And can you share some of these fun stories? I mean, even sound effects that, you know, Frank Walker might have made while you guys were filming something, or I mean recording something, I should say.
It's hard to recall most of that because it all happens at the moment, and then you move on with the show. I mean, I do recall we were doing something with, I think, the Inhumanoids with Wally Burr and Susan Blue. Susan Shiloh was one of the characters. I played Blackthorn. She was my sister or something. And Wally always wanted a lot of energy and power behind your voices. And Sue's got a really, Sue's got a very cutting voice, and she really cuts in. But he kept saying, louder. Make it bigger, Sue. Make it bigger. She turned around and looked at me, and I could see this was getting tougher. And I finally said, "Wally, hang on, Wally. This is a girl. I want to show. This is a girl. I'm a guy. I can do this. She can't do that. She's already leaving blood on the window. I think you better back off." And he went, "Oh, I'm sorry, Sue. Are you okay?" She said, "Yeah, Wally. But it's getting hard." And he went, "Okay, no problem. It was good. It was good. Let's just move ahead."
Oh my gosh.
But he wasn't aware. He hears something. He heard, rest his soul, heard something in his head, and I think he wanted to play every character we all played. He wanted to be everybody. But he had a good sense of humor. I mean, you could get away with a lot with him. And we were always packed in there for all the different shows, G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Humanoids, blah, blah. We were packed into this little studio, this little tiny little studio. I'm surprised, you know, all of us didn't get married at one point to each other. I mean, we knew each other real well after 8 hours in this clamped studio.
Oh, yeah. And I guess it's not the same. Is it still the same anymore? I mean, a lot of people do it from home now, right?
Yeah, they'll do it from home, or if they go into studio. I've done a couple of Disney things. I just finished doing something. What the heck was it? Something about a robot, Wild Robot, I think it was. And you do groups sometimes, or you do separate booths, and the director talks to you in separate studios. They're still being very adhered to the concept of COVID, so everybody works to some degree separately. I don't know anybody that's doing work together. Maybe the Simpson people are. I don't know.
So it's just not the same feel as what it was back in the 80s.
No, it wasn't so. It in the 80s, it was, you were actors. You were working in almost to some degree like a brief repertory company. It was fun. You got to play. Talk about outtakes. Yeah, there were tons of outtakes. I'd be surprised if they ever released them, because some of them were just, oh my God. I mean, you know, with people like Frank and, you know, like that, really good, funny stuff. And you'll always hear Peter laughing in the background, because Peter just did nothing but laugh. He would just fall apart every time we said something. But yeah, it was always great fun. It wasn't as much fun. It was work, but it wasn't as much fun doing it, because you were by yourself. It was sort of I used to call it vocal baiting.
Oh.
Get the analogy.
Well, I think we got a good taste of that recently when they had the 40th anniversary special in the
movie
theaters.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, you guys were all together there. That was amazing.
Yeah, and they didn't even leave in the best stuff. We had a lot of funny stuff that was in there they cut. I was very surprised that they cut, because that was the reason for us getting together, was the silliness among us and the things we were saying to each other. They just used very, very little of it. Very little.
That was
the
perfect
time. At one time, there was, as I recall, it was in the middle of it, there was an airplane that suddenly you could hear the airplane flying overhead, and we were waiting, and I said, Frank, that's Arthur Burkhart in your plane. And everybody broke up.
That's awesome. Have you been approached for anything like the G.I. Joe cartoon, for something similar down the line, perhaps? Because it seemed like this did really, really well for people.
No one has talked to us about that at all, and that'd have to come from what is it, the big toy company
Hasbro?
It would have to come from Hasbro, would it not? Don't they have control?
Is that how they did it with the Transformer one? The Hasbro?
Oh yeah,
contacted you on it.
Yeah, they contacted us and said, well, you know, would you be willing to? We all went to a studio and did our thing, and it was kind of fun. That was a fun day, because we all got to schmooze and talk about our lives and our family and the stuff that we did, and old Wally stories and old stories. Aww. About each other. That was kind of fun.
I would have loved to have seen that happening, and just like you said, everything that they didn't record, that would have been fun just to hear it and hear how everybody's doing, and you know, just the time difference, you know. It's
That's not me.
But I heard that Frank can bark like a dog. And actually, several years back, he was at a BotCon with Sue. And Sue Blue had her little dog with her. And I walked into the green room because I was assisting that weekend. And I honestly thought it was Sue's dog until she said, no, that was Frank barking.
Well, we got so used to that. Because in the beginning, before Frank appeared on the scene, I was the one who was called upon to do the dogs and the cats and the whales, and I wound up doing all that stuff, you know, for Super Friends and all those things. And then Frank showed, and I said, okay, I can be relieved of my position of doing animals. And every now and then they called me to do an animal, and finally, a couple of years later into it, somebody called, got a call to do a movie, to do voiceovers for a movie, and I had to do chimps. I think it's called First Monkey on the Moon, or First Something on the Moon, or something. And with a lot of big stars in it, but they had all these chimps in the film, live action. And I said, well, have you called Frank Welker? Because, you know, Frank does a lot of that stuff. I said, yeah, we did, but Frank said, call Michael Bell. because he didn't want to spend all day long doing all these different chimps, crying, laughing, angry, happy. And I knew in the middle of it that I was probably find out where Frank lived and I was going to go kill him.
So you had to do you had to do chimps in all types of moods.
All types of moods, because they'd show the clip, and I'd have to be sit, and the director would say, "Okay, this chimp is a little happy. Now this chimp is really angry, so I want to hear the angry sound." Now I get and oh my god! And I think James Woods was the star of the on camera star of the film, and it was like first monkey on the moon or something, and I wound up doing all these chimps and sounds, and thank goodness I was prepared for it, but it was a throat ripper. By the end of the day, I felt like Aldo Ray. I sounded like this at the end of the day.
Oh no!
So you were ready for a good rest and a good drink after that was done, huh?
I was ready for a bottle of tequila. And I said, Frank, I'm coming for you.
So what's your regimen to kind of protect your voice, your vocal cords and everything, to keep them fresh? Because even now they sound so fresh and vibrant as they are.
I just say no to the job.
No.
I just say, I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to yell. My voice has softened over the years. I sound differently almost every day. Some days if I spend 2 or 3 days not talking, my voice comes back entirely. Then once I start talking again, it smooths out. It has a warmth, as it were, to it. There's not the cutting edge. Because I listen to stuff that I did. Every now and then I'll go to YouTube, mm-hmm. and I'll tune in. There's a wonderful commercial I did for Hallmark years ago. A beautiful commercial I did for Hallmark. Really warm. And I said, that's the voice I had. That was what I did sound like. Although that's what got me so much work all those years ago.
Wow. I'll have to find that. That's very cool.
And speaking of soft voices and stuff like that, you actually, and I heard this from Neil Ross's book again. I mean, so you'll have to get on to him that I'm mentioning all this. But he mentioned one time that you guys were the princesses, the little kids or a bunch of princesses in a cart one time on Voltron. You had to voice for a bunch of little women giggling and carrying on.
Little girls who were running from the monster and giggling, and in some cases running and screaming and crying and yelling, save me, because I think all they had was Neil. Neil's voice was still deeper than mine, but he had Neil and BJ Ward and myself, and that was it. And so we wound up doing that, those little giggly girls and crying and, oh, help me, all that stuff. And I was watching, I think years later, I'm watching television with my daughter. I think she was probably about 18. She was about 19, I think, at the time. And we're watching television, and I began to switch around. And I said, oh, look, there's Voltron. And oh, wow, look at that. And wouldn't you know, that's the scene that pops up. Not Lance, and not Sven, but the scene with the little girls getting killed and screaming and yelling. And Ashley turns around to me. She said, is that you? And I said, never mind, just watch. And there's more screaming and yelling. She goes, I think that's you. And I said, and that's what paid for your college education show. Shut the f*** up.
That's great. Oh, my gosh. I love that.
So that had to have been one of the most embarrassing voices you ever had to do, right?
Oh, easy. Easy, the most embarrassing. It was easier to do mice, the mice in mm-hmm. Voltron than it was
doing. You had to do the mice, too?
Oh, yeah, we went up.
There you go. I can hear them now. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I can hear those little. I can't even remember the mice's name anymore, but I know they had like one was Chip or Cheddar or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Cheddar, I think it was Cheddar, yeah.
So, going way back to the beginning, you talk about, doing voice acting and everything, and you did the one training video or whatnot. What kind of brought you into acting itself? Like, what drew you into it? How did you get started into that?
That was, I wanted to be an actor since I was 5 years old. you know, I read about actors that are very successful, and so I just sort of fell into it. And I go, how do you fall into it? How do you suddenly get so immediately successful? I mean, whether it's a sports figure or a model, and I go, what do you mean you fell into it? Somebody saw you sitting on a stool in a drugstore and said, "Well, you should be an actor," and all of a sudden you're a movie star. I worked like the devil. I was 5 years old when I wanted it, and I struggled through it. I went through high school and went to the High School of Performing Arts in New York. I worked in cleaning bathrooms. I did all kinds of jobs. I worked at Grauman's Chinese as an usher.
Wow.
And I worked washing dishes and waiting tables. I was one of those guys on skates, skating in one of those drive-in restaurants. I think Dolores' drive-in restaurant out in Hollywood in Wilshire Boulevard, you know, skating up to somebody's window, you know, and serving. I mean, I did all kinds of work. And to finally get an agent, it was deadly. It was hard. And these guys that, you know, just fell into it. I go, how do you do that? How did anybody do that? I studied. I studied intensely. I went to so many drama coaches. One drama coach, Jeff Corey, who's a very famous actor, said, when I came to him and I said, I'd like to study with you, and I told him what I was interested in, he said, okay, read something for me. And I didn't. He said, okay, you can come to my class. And, you know, Jack Nicholson was in the class. A lot of people were in that class.
Wow.
Well known. And I said, thank you. I said, now, I just to tell you, I don't have a lot of money. He said, did I discuss money with you? I said, no, but he said, forget it.
Wow.
You just come into the class. And that was, I mean, who does that? That was so dear, so kind. And I wound up being in his class and training, you know, for my career. And then eventually someone said, you know, you really got it, kid. I'm gonna see if I can get you a contract. And he got me a contract at Universal Studios. It was a killer. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, cause,
but it took. I was well into my 30s at that point. Nowadays, that's old.
Right.
Yeah. Nowadays, you know, kids are doing it at 13, 14, 18, 19, 20 years old.
Well, nowadays they're trying to do it on TikTok or YouTube or whatever. But
in
the day, you've had to work for it, I think, and I think you earn it more back then.
Boy, yeah. Did I work for it! I worked like a crazy person. I remember coming home to a garage apartment and lying in bed and just and I think it was my late 20s, early 30s, because I didn't make it till well into my 30s, and lying in bed thinking, what's going to happen? What is going to happen to me? And I remember just lying there, tears coming down my face, soaking the pillow, thinking, did I make the right decision? Is this what I should be doing? I mean, what is going to happen to me? I'm living in a garage apartment, which was nice. I liked the garage apartment. And I was working, I think, at Fredericks of Hollywood at the time, working in their warehouse.
Okay, I was about to say, you're not modeling or anything.
No, okay. No, I was modeling. I said, what's going to happen to me? And then all of a sudden, boom, I met a wonderful lady named Joni Gerber, who was one of the top voiceovers in the business. And we went together. Somebody introduced us, and we went together. And she said, you're wasting your time. When I started to go under contract, even going under contract, she said, you're wasting your time. You're doing on-camera stuff that'll last for a while, but then they're going to get tired, and you've got a tremendous career doing wonderful characters vocally. So she got me started, and my first real gig was with Mel Blanc.
Wait, hold on. You worked with Mel Blanc?
Yeah. Yeah, she brought me over to Mel. She was very close with Mel. She did a lot of work for Mel and for Noah Blanc, his son, who's a friend of mine now.
Right.
And she said, I want you to meet Michael Bell. And we met, and he was really sweet. And he said, well, go in the booth with Dad. And I went, with your dad? And I said, do you want me to go in the booth with Mel Blanc? And she said, yeah, go in the booth. So I went in the booth, and Mel said, how you doing, boy, Chick? And I said, hi. And he says, Dad, I want you to be an East Indian. Then you could do different characters. You can't do that now. He's Dad, I want you to do East Indian or Asian, whatever. And Mike, you're buying a rug from him, and this, I get whatever the product was.
Right.
And we started. And then he said, no, Dad, you're doing an American Indian. I want an East Indian. And we started again. He said, no, Dad, you're doing an American Indian. I need an East Indian. And we started again. He said, okay, Mike, do you do East Indian? And I did. I had studied like crazy doing dialects. And I looked at Mel and I said, is that okay? She said, go for it. I'll play the other role.
Wow.
And I did it. And we wound up doing it. And when I got home, I said, I just beat Mel Blanc out of a job.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
Oh, my God. And then we worked together in Speed Buggy.
Yeah, Tony was just, Tony's in the basement, and he just worked Speed Buggy.
Yeah, wow. It didn't even dawn on me because, you know, I'm thinking a little bit later, but wow, that just blows my mind. I love that.
Yeah.
That's, wow. So my kind of, I guess, last question or whatnot I have for myself is, out of all your different voice acting gigs, out of all your different acting gigs or anything like that, what's been the one that really sticks out for you?
Well, it's you know, they're all my children, and it's like you talk about who's your favorite kid, but I guess if I was held to it and manacled and slapped around a little bit, I probably would have to say my character on Rugrats. Two characters, Chucky's dad, Chaz, and Grandpa Boris, the Jewish grandpa.
Aww.
Those are nicely, really well-written characters. And probably the third would be Opus and A Wish for Wings That Work for Spielberg. That was a Christmas special. That was a wonderful opportunity.
I think those
three characters stand out, yeah. Those three characters.
Wow.
I think with that, we're probably going to shift on to a few more final thoughts. Is there any websites or any place where people can follow you on social media? Because I'd like them to follow you if there's, I know you're on Facebook, but any websites or any place they can follow you?
I don't know. I know my daughter put me on Instagram. I never go there, to be honest with you. Cause it just takes up too much time and so many people showing what they ate and what they're wearing, and I really don't care about all that. I think what I tell people who are interested in doing voice work, or at least developing their ability to do characters, to go to YouTube. I'm on YouTube on, I think they just type in Michael Bell Voice Animation Workshop, and it's free. And I do a work for an hour and a half with some youngsters who, some of them now quite successful doing commercials. Doing voice work, training them how to build characters. It's a beginning class, like an hour and a half on how to build characters as an actor.
Yeah, I know a couple of people mentioned, Neil Ross in his book mentioned that you used to do classes too. So I think we're going to end it for now, but I want to thank you for coming on here, and I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you. I'll be seeing you in Philly at RetroCon.
Yep, we're looking forward to that. I can't wait.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care. Goodbye.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Bell. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye, Tony.
Michael, we can't thank you enough for being with us. Right, Michael?
That's right.
Not Michael. Michael Bro's with me every week, but Michael Bell's something unique.
Very unique. He was very fun to talk to. Thank you, good sir. It was an awesome to meet you over this microphone, and I'll see you at RetroCon.
And until next week, same bat.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thank you for joining us on Retro Talk.
Come sponsor Retro Talk, where your support keeps us on the air. If you want more information, send an email to wxpm985@gmail.com and we'll send you our brochure.
You've been listening to
Retro Talk with Retro Rose
here on
98.5 WXPM.
Be back next week, same time, same channel.
The music? Remember the movies? Remember the cars, the fashions, the news, the things that stood out during our youth? It's okay to be nerdy. Join me as I reminisce over the cartoons, the toys, and the video games of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Turn back the clock with Retro Talk.
Weekends on 98.5 XPM's Million Dollar Weekend Lineup.